You are listening to the Horse Radio Network, part of the Equine Network family.
This is episode 782 of the Dressage Radio Show on the Horse Radio Network, brought to you by Kentucky Performance Products. The Dressage Radio Show is the official podcast of the United States Dressage Federation. On today's show, we kick things off with Marie Mendoza, who shares her incredible experience riding with Carl Hester at the Harvest Dressage Masterclass held at Galway Downs, November 8th through 9th. Next, we dive into a roundtable discussion with Lauren Chumley and Michael Bragdale, exploring insights on young horse development and training the next generation of trainers. This is Reese Koffler-Stanfield in Georgetown, Kentucky.
And I am Megan McIsaac in Oregon, Wisconsin, and you're listening to the Dressage Radio Show.
Hi, Megan. How are you?
Hey, Reese. I am in recovery mode.
I was going to say, how are you? Yes, remind everybody, how are you and what did you do this weekend and why are you recovering?
I'm recovering because we had the last of the series for dressage trainers. And it was the lunging series with Ann Guptill. So it was awesome. More people should attend the entire series, first of all. And we should all attend lunging because I was like, oh, this was a really good refresher for me. I mean, I'm certified in it. And I was like, oh, shoot, I'm not doing that. Oh, yeah. So it was a great seminar.
Awesome. It is one of those seminars that I think it is actually the most failed part of the instructor certification. Like that's how bad people lunge.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's a thing. And so yes, if you ever get an opportunity to go, or quite frankly, take a lesson with a certified instructor who has gone through the program, and you will get a ton of lunging tips. Like I think that's really important to know and remember.
And I love the classroom session. And we also had videos. We had three videos that we watched. And it's just great to have that dialogue and discussion before we even put it into practical application. And we also were able to watch Ann Guptill lunge four horses. So two horses without a rider, two horses with riders. So and it's rigorous. So, and I'm just the host. I'm exhausted.
I bet. Yes. Well, I think that's so important too. Like it's the time of year. I have some barns that they actually get together like on a Thursday night in the winter and they do lunging together.
Oh, fun.
And they have a ball. And when I get back from Florida, I'm like, okay, everybody's better. I need to join this Thursday lunge club. Like it's cool. And they have fun and they get together. And I'm sure there's I think they go to dinner after and have a little fun and libation. And they look forward to it. And so there really is a skill to lunging. And I think that's amazing. Yeah. And props to you for organizing and doing that. Anybody who's listening to this and who's organized anything knows exactly how you feel.
Well, and I think it's really important, like yourself, Reese, to give back to our community. You know, I mean, there were people for us that volunteered for us and put on amazing events. Yep. And kind of like our theme, I want to give back to the next generation. And so that's really important to me. What have you been up to?
Yeah. So you did a great intro into our show. I'm really excited about the show. It's about how do we teach the next generation? And I think we're going to have a really, really good discussion about it. And I'm giving back. I was grading papers all week because of my college class I was teaching. But it's been good, busy, been traveling a ton for clinics. I have another one this weekend, the next two weekends, actually. Teaching a lot, which is so fun. It is fun, but it is also exhausting, but that's okay.
Yeah.
And then getting ready for holidays and then for Thanksgiving and then convention. So everybody remember, convention is here in Lexington. Megan and I are going to be there. So come and join us. We would love that. Yeah, we'll be around, won't we, Megan?
I'm so excited. I can't wait to meet people. I can't wait to see you in person.
I know. We haven't seen each other in forever. We talk all the time now. Like every day we talk. And so it'll be so fun to like actually hang out in person. It's going to be great.
I can't wait.
It's going to be a good time. It's going to be a great time. Well, Everybody, we hope you enjoyed tonight's show and this discussions. We're going to come back after a break from Kentucky Performance Products. And as always, my horses look so great because of the products. I so believe in the company and the whole team they have over there is amazing.
And we're going to have this break from Kentucky Performance Products. And again, this is an amazing company. I work very closely with them and Delia and her whole team. And I'm so thankful for them because, again, their products are phenomenal and make our horses look amazing. So thank you for their support to the show as well.
Does your performance horse have sore, stiff muscles? Does he lack energy or tire quickly during exercise? Does his competition schedule require travel? Studies show that horses in regular training and those with limited access to pasture often require additional vitamin E. They also show that horses being trailered even short distances can face immunity challenges. Elevate Natural Vitamin E can help. A research-proven, powerful antioxidant, Elevate maintains healthy muscle, nerve, and immune functions. It does this by delivering a highly bioavailable source of natural vitamin E that is preferentially absorbed and retained in a horse's tissues. For more information, visit kppusa.com or call 859-873-2974.
On today's show, I am so excited to introduce my good friend, Marie Mondosi, to you. This is her first time on the radio show. She is an FEI and young horse trainer, and she's going to tell us all about the Carl Hester Clinic. Welcome, Marie. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
Hi, thanks so much for having me. I'm so excited to be on your podcast. I love listening to it. I am a hardworking barn manager, rider, trainer, and coach in San Diego, California, out of the Palms Equestrian Center. And I am just really happy to be here to talk about it. I train young horses, and I was able to take one of my clients' young horses as a demo rider in the Carl Clinic. And I also train through the FEI levels and just always get good coaching from my colleagues. And that's me.
I love it. Well, first of all, I just had to giggle with the hardworking trainer. I was like, I feel you, sister. We're together. We're like banded together, the three of us. I love it. Well, Marie, I mean, one of the things, I saw this clinic come up and I was like, how do I get to California? And then I'm thinking, what are you doing? There's no way. So tell us a little bit about the Carl Hester, like how was it set up? And then what was your role?
So I was basically just a rider. I really do take pride in trying to help in any way I can, you know, sometimes too much. I kind of spread myself a little thin, but I just really like to be helpful. So I did try to help Kelly and just whatever she needed while we were there. But really, I was a demo rider. And in the young horse class, I took the 5-year-old and we just had such a phenomenal time. I knew that even though he is actually quite an advanced 5-year-old, he learns everything really quickly. Our basic gaits and connection and throughness always are his weakness. So I knew that going into the Carl Hester Clinic, I was going to get exactly what was needed.
And tell us about the horse. What is his name? What have you been doing with him? How long have you had him? Is he a client's horse?
Yes. So my friend and client and sponsor, Monica Garner, who owns the Palms Equestrian Center, where I operate out of, we went to Europe in 2023 and were searching for horses. And we were actually at a barn looking at a different horse, and we walked by this little guy just looking so cute standing in the cross ties. And Monica actually totally fell in love with him. Aww. And of course, I did too once I saw him in the round pen. He had actually just gotten selected by the KWPN, and he was still a stallion. He had one ride under his belt ever in his life. And I said, well, I'd love to try them because I'm not going to buy a horse that I haven't sat on before. So they were like, well, okay, but you got to go in the round pen. And
you got to have a vest and a helmet. And
I don't
all
know
the
what
things.
Kind of a rider you are. And I said, no problem, because I love the spicy ones. But so I went in the round pen and sat on him and instantly fell in love. He was just phenomenal. I was like, oh, gosh, well, this is going to be years to organize these gates. But I love a challenge. And he's just a really cool guy. We actually, I call him my Mustang pony. He looks kind of like Spirit from the movie.
Oh, stop it.
he's very small, but with a huge personality. And we got him as a just broke 3-year-old. And I imported him as a stallion. He went to Kentucky to do his quarantine.
Oh, he's on the street.
And he was a great boy there. He got a, sort of a, let's call it a C- on his report card. He wasn't very nice to the ladies when he had to breed. And but then he came to California, a couple, oh gosh, it was weeks, almost a couple months later after the quarantine. And I started developing him. I actually did take him to Chicago in the 4-year-old division as a four-year-old. And to be honest, I one day will share the videos that I have of leading up to Chicago, because I have some amazing rodeo shows, let me tell you.
Whoa.
And he really didn't put a foot out of place in Chicago, and he didn't put a foot out of place in the Ingrid Klimke symposium we did that Ontrigue also put on, as well as the Carl Hester Clinic. And he just is a showman. Like, you walk in the ring in front of 800 people and he's like, I've never
got this
put a foot wrong ever in my life. What are you talking about?
And what was it like to ride in front of Carl?
Oh my gosh. I really actually went in feeling so nervous. Get like really crazy stress dreams all the time before a big event. It's more so about, pleasing my client and making sure I do a good job. And I knew that I didn't have to worry about anything, because I didn't even warm up. Like, the day before, I just did 10 minutes just to loosen his body. And then I said, I want to really go into the ring without preparing. I want him to almost see us at our worst and have him help us from the very beginning, because I can really warm him up and get him to a good place that I really like the connection and I like the feel. But it takes a while for me to find that. So it was a leap of faith that I had to not warm up and just go in there knowing that I was kind of leaving my dirty laundry out. But of course, Carl was extremely supportive. He made me feel so comfortable with his joking around and all of the basic work, which is exactly what we need.
I love that. So tell us who else rode, like, give us the tea. Who rode, how was it set up, that kind of stuff.
Yeah. So I was in a group with Sophia Chavanel. She is Sabine Shute Carey's assistant rider and
I love her.
Head groom. She's fantastic. She's a beautiful rider.
Yep.
Beautiful rider. And yes, very hardworking. And then Verena Mahan, who's just down the road from us, she rode her 5-year-old as well in the medium class. And then there were two lovely event riders who I had never met before, actually. And they rode so beautiful, and they brought some very talented event horses that were really moving quite well.
So, Marie, what was your overall takeaway from the clinic?
Simple, good riding, not to be in a rush, and really just, you hear this all the time, but coming from Carl Hester, it's it's even more. He's so impressionable that every horse is different. Every horse takes time. You know, my horse, again, he's already learned the flying changes. We can half pass, like beautiful half passes, but the general connection is much weaker than, for example, Sophia's horse or Verena's horse. So it was really just so encouraging to hear that, and just simple, good riding, always, you know, back to front, everything in your position. You know, when he looks out from just glances at you, always a back to front feeling.
I love it. Well, Marie, thank you so much for your time tonight. How can our listeners find you online?
Oh, you can. I'm on Instagram at Marie Medosi Dressage, and also my website is mariemedosi.com.
Fantastic. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Marie.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye.
Well, Megan, you and I both have the cat, two cats that we love. And there is a chewy box that comes to this farm at least twice a week. And my cats are, I called my vet and I was like, oh my gosh, they're not kittens anymore. Like, what do I do food wise? And thank you to Chewy, because I have new kitty food coming for our grown up kitties. So thanks for their support as well.
Get ready for fall with Chewy. From hoof boots and saddlebags for golden hour adventures to coolers and clippers for crisp weather workouts, you'll find everything your horse needs this season. Support their health through pasture changes with vitamin E and ration balancers, or care for a metabolic horse with targeted supplements, prescriptions, and even ice boots to soothe soreness. And if your horse is feeling a little too fresh in the fall air, calming supplements are just a click away. With trusted brands you know and fast, free shipping on all orders over $49, Chewy makes it easy to keep your horse comfortable and cared for. For seasonal must-haves, for the brands you trust, for fast delivery, there's Chewy. Shop now at chewy.com/equine.
Well, on tonight's show, we have a great panel to talk about training our next generation and training trainers. And I'm so excited to have on the show Michael Bragdell. He has been a friend of everyone on this panel for years. He's the head trainer at Hilltop Farm and has trained many, many horses and many riders. And we have Lauren Shumley back by popular demand. She actually wrote this article and it was picked up. It actually went out last year, and then it was picked up by Kira Kirkland and shared by Kira Kirkland, which, Lauren, I have to be honest, my friend, that's a huge, like, I was like, oh my God, Kira just shared Lauren's article. So welcome to you both to the show. And Lauren, I'll have you get started. Tell us, we know you, you were on last week's show, but tell us a little bit about yourself and how you started this article.
Well, I just, you know, I've always had to buy my horses as foals because I had no other option. It was, you know, I buy them as foals, basically on payments from whatever breeder was like willing to work with me. So then we had to, you know, kind of figure out how to train them. And that's kind of how I got started with the young horse training. Cause I always rode young horses. I've been, you know, we started horses. I began starting horses for the Fjord Farm in Ohio when I was 15. I started them all by myself, didn't have help, got a round pen. Like, we just started there, and then they became riding horses, and then became show horses. And then we sold them, and then I got nicer and nicer and nicer horses. And that's, you know, essentially how I kind of ended up where I am today, with a whole lot of really nice horses that we, you know, bought young and trained all the way up.
And Michael, really, I mean, you tell us your story, but you are famous for doing and creating stallions and horses and riders. So tell us, welcome back to the show, Michael.
Thank you for having me.
Yes, we'd love it. So Michael, kind of tell us your story and your take a little bit.
I started as a jumper. I grew up in Sweden, you know, a little kid at the riding club and predominantly jumping. And one thing led to the next. Wanted to travel the world, worked in England for a year with some jumper breeders, and then ended up at Hilltop. Was supposed to be a short stint working with dressage horses. I was hoping they had some jumper out in the shed somewhere. And one thing led to the next. I started studying here, started riding more dressage. And yeah, and now that's all I do. That's all I do.
You got married. You had babies.
I got married. Like, had babies myself. You know, yeah. they're learning the Spanish walk.
Are you questioning? Well. Are you questioning your life choices? Go back to jumping.
No, I do miss the jumping. I do miss the jumping, but I do have a very different appreciation for dressage nowadays than what I did when I first arrived here. I literally did not know what the dressage was. I think the only dressage person I really knew was Kira Kirkland. I had seen her at the Gothenburg International Horse Show. I was there for the World Cup finals for the jumpers, and she, I believe, rode Matador. Mm-hmm. And she came across the diagonal, and she had a microphone on, and I was just fascinated. She came across the diagonal doing one tempies, and she's telling us, stop, without losing her breath, what she was doing.
Wow.
And I awesome. Was just like, how do you do that? Like, that's crazy.
Can you do that now, Michael? Can you do that
now?
No,
I could not. I
have the asthma attack right there.
We can test it out next week.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Oh, I guarantee. Yeah. I want to see this video.
Send
video. I want to see this video. So, well, Michael, I think you brought up a good point, which is a little bit in Europe, the whole system is different than here, right?
It is.
There are schools. Tell people a little bit about the system in Europe, where they're riding schools and they're places where you go. And so tell everybody a little bit about that system, because we don't have that really in the U.S.
I mean, I was probably the typical kid at the riding school. We did not have a farm where I grew up. I didn't grow up with horses. My dad was the one who got me into the horses, and he started taking some riding lessons at the local riding club. And it was something you did once a week, and some got more into it. You know, you could get more hands-on if you helped them at the stalls on the weekend. You know, then you get assigned one of the school horses, and maybe you get to ride when the school horse has a day off on the weekend. That was sort of the prize, you know, because you were helping out. And it's very common in countries across Europe, I believe, like definitely in Sweden. And when I got the opportunity to get a part-time job, and I got to ride some of the school horses and some schoolmasters, then all of a sudden it kind of sparked an interest for me, and I'm like, man, I kind of like this, and I want to do more of this.
Yeah.
But sort of the base knowledge early on, and the way you have to kind of work your way up, I think is a lot more ingrained just in the basics of how the riding schools are run. Yeah, I think the pony club, I think here in the States, is a little bit similar to how the riding clubs are in Sweden. I don't know. I don't have experience with the pony clubs here in the U.S., but I think that is sort of similar system in how it's in Sweden.
Yeah, I think the only thing is the in Europe there's literally in a lot of towns there's a riding school.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
we don't really have that. I mean, even here in Lexington, Kentucky, it's hard to find a place to start riding and then even go and learn. And Lauren, this is, I mean, again, Megan and I, Michael, we all have kind of a working student program, but tell us a little bit about how that works for you.
Well, we have a pretty big working student program. We can take up to 5 at a time.
Wow.
It's been a few years since I've been fully staffed, obviously.
Yeah.
But it's, you know, the girls do, they work, and they work for board, they work for housing, they work for lessons and training, they ride other horses. I also pay them, because you have to pay people because they can't, you know, they have to eat. But like they work in exchange for knowledge. It's like an apprenticeship, right? So they learn kind of the ins and outs of running a big show stable. And we have a big sales component too, which is, I think, important for kids to learn how you can actually make money doing this, because it is actually possible to make money doing this. And like, so they get to kind of see how the sales go. I mean, that's how I learned, because, you know, when I started my first job was at the Fjord Farm, and they're like, we have a bunch of horses. Can you help us sell them? And I'm like, I'm 16, but okay. So we like made videos with the VHS, you know, the camcorder, the big one. And I would edit them with like a double VCR, you know, like, oh, it bolted with me. Click, take that out. Right. Like, you know, but that's how we started. We started doing that. But I've been doing sales my whole life. And I think if you, you know, haven't been in sales, it's a little bit hard to break into, but it's a good way to make money. Right. Mm-hmm. So, you know, and it's also fun. I very much enjoy like getting the horses, figuring them out, figuring out what kind of rider they need, how they're going to be best suited, and then matching them up. Like, it's like it's a fun game for me. It's very, you know, intellectually stimulating. So I love doing that, but the working students are all involved with that program. Right. Like, because again, if you have a sale horse, if it can only be ridden by me 6 days a week, it's probably not a very good sale horse.
Right.
That's not a very marketable thing. And the girls that work for me are all very good riders, FEI level riders. Some of them have done young riders. Some of them have done CDI. And, you know, it's good for them to ride a range of horses, right? Because we get all kinds of things in. Yes. So I think that's really cool. And then they, you know, if they have their own horses, we can do continuous work on their horses and work towards their showing goals, which I really, really like, because I like the whole team aspect where we're all working towards our goals together, right? Instead of just like, oh, it's all about me, because I don't think it's ever truly, you know, it's not about you, it's about the team, right?
Right.
And I like the collaboration of it. So that's kind of how my working student program runs. And we have a big program, so there's lots of horses, so it's a lot of riding. Like, I think my girls are each riding at least 6 horses a day right now.
Wow. Do they teach in my working student program? They teach?
No. So I have a, you know, my business is probably split into thirds. So, you know, just to simplify it, like a third of them are training horses that I train or are there for training. We show their, you know, competition horses. A third of them are probably like my horses and the girls' horses. And then a third of the business is sales. So, so I do all the teaching, and the girls, you know, they help each other. I'm on the road a lot following Michael up and down the coast for horse shows. So they're there when I'm not there. So they help each other. But the teaching, I do the teaching of the, you know, the amateur lady clients. We have a few of those, not a lot anymore. I've shifted a little bit more into the sales now at this point, but yeah, they don't teach so much right now. You know, if we have somebody that comes in to try a sale horse, like that's kind of a teaching situation. We need to help them with the sale horse. So if that opportunity comes up and they know the horse, I kind of like, we'll push them out to do it if it's one that they're familiar with, and you know, but mostly it's a lot of riding and training.
Yeah. And Michael, your setup is different, right? You're the head trainer at Hilltop Farm. So how does it work at Hilltop, and how do you have do you have working students there?
We currently don't. It has gone through different sets of setups through the years that I've been here. Like I said, when I first came, I was a working student, and they had a pretty solid working student program. Mm-hmm. At the time, I believe we were anything from 3 to 4 working students, and that seemed to work pretty good. But it was, so my first 2, probably 3 years, it was starting to wind down and then shifting, and we had mostly Europeans coming in, and we would then stay for approximately a year. Mm-hmm. And then we sort of worked our way away from having working students. Mm-hmm. I believe we had a period where we had some American working students, and then Chris Hickey came in, and I actually don't remember if we had a working student program running or not at that time period. I know when I took over as head trainer, we have been trying to do a working student program on and off, but kind of been unsuccessful with it.
Yeah.
And it's something I've always wanted, would love to have run a working student program, because I grew up doing it myself. I think it's a wonderful way to learn and to be able to study under somebody that you appreciate their riding, their training, their horses, really to be hands-on. But it is a working job.
Yeah.
So you're learning as you were working. And I think that's sometimes a little bit hard to encompass. I was a working student myself. It was hard work, and you work 6, sometimes 7 days, and but it was interesting, and you saw a lot of things that, you know, I didn't understand, and you want to try to understand, you know, okay, what are they doing? How are they doing that? And, you know, why is the horse responding this way and all those things? And I think if you stay for a very short time, if you stay for 3 months or 6 months, it's not enough. Like, I feel to really encompass everything that happens on a farm, you need to be there at least a year. And that first year, you're understanding what it takes to take care of those horses, what the routine is of that trainer, what the routine is of this barn, what the seasons are, because the seasons are different. How is the winter season compared to the show season? What do the riders do when they prep for the horse show? What do they do when they prep for inspections? How do they prep the stallions in the fall? You know, what's the difference from the stallions not being collected versus when breeding season's going on? And you don't get that if you only stay 6 months. Even 10 months is not enough. I really feel like you need 1 year. And then after that year, you can start saying, okay, now I can take ownership of my job, and I can maybe contribute something that you feel, well, maybe I can structure this a little different. You know, I'm always open to making things easier and better. And I always tell whoever comes in and works for me, this is how I have been doing it. Now, this is not the only way to do it. I like certain things. I'm a little bit particular with how I want certain things, of course. But if they see something, you know, they come in from a different perspective, and they see something that they can change and make easier for them, I'm totally open for it, you know.
Yeah.
But you don't really know that until you've been there at least a year. So I think that's been the difficult part running a working student program here. We don't have what Lauren has, where we can offer a lot of horses for them to ride. You know, the horses that are in training are with me, and my client's expectation is that I'm educating them and bring them along and getting ready for horse shows. So if I have a capable rider, yes, maybe they will get a chance to sit on them, but I'm predominantly the main rider. If they bring their horse, you know, yes, I can help them and help them continue educating their horse, but that might only be that horse that they have. But the real challenge for me here at Hilltop has been to keep them long enough. You know, they stay for 6 months, and I'm like, great, now I'm a trainer. Now I can go off and I can do my own thing.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, you haven't, I'm like, you missed half the year. There's more going on in the world.
No. And I think, Michael, you brought up some really good points. And number one, it's a working student. You are working. Like, I think, I mean, but the four of us are all still working. You got 4 trainers on here, and I guarantee we all worked till the minute we got on this call.
And of course, and we're, you know, it's a fine line. You don't want to abuse it either and say,
correct,
you know,
sure,
work them to death. You know, I have been in those shoes, and I know what it's like. So I want to be conscious about I want to try to make it a better world for the next generation.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I don't want to have to make it. I don't want to be the one that says, well, I worked, you know, I have to walk barefoot through 5 feet of snow.
Which you probably did. Like, let's be real.
Of course I did.
Uphill both ways. So, Lauren, I really liked reading about your system and how you start them on your FEI horses, and then they have to work their way down. Do you think you can just touch on that a little bit?
Yeah, I am fortunate to have quite a few old schoolmasters that I own that are my personal horses that, you know, either I picked up along the way, you know, bargain basement deal. I love a sale. So I, you know, picked them up, and some of them have gone to like NAYC. They've gone to Devon CDI for Young Riders, that kind of thing. And they're horses that I don't need to compete anymore. And they're quirky, they're weird horses, but they do the Grand Prix. So it's good for the kids to learn to ride that kind of horse, because I always tell them, you are never, ever in your entire life going to have a client come to you with a made, trained 70% Grand Prix horse and say, here, I'd please like you to ride this around and be the horse pilot, right? Like, that's not reality. That's not reality. You're going to get the weirdo. You're going to get the freak, right? Like, if you get something FEI, it's probably got a problem somewhere that you have to, you know, work through or you know, try to fix as best you can. And, you know, so they get to start on these horses, which I think is great. They're not dangerous horses, but they're tricky, right? So you learn how to ride that. And then you can go down and ride, you know, okay, now you can ride a horse. This horse is here to be sold. It has green flying changes. Let me show you how you ride a green flying change, right? Okay. Mm-hmm. And then I have my own young horses, right? Because I love to buy babies a little bit too much, unfortunately. But like, okay, this one sees the fall of its 5-year-old year, early 6-year-old, whatever that horse is, you know, where it is in its training. And, you know, now it's time to put the changes on. Let's talk about that. So then you can learn how to put the changes on. And this is how you, and then you go down from there. Okay, now you're going to see, this is how you teach it, start to prep, teach for, you know, prepping it to learn the haunches in or shoulder in. And then when they're really good, they get to ride a 3-year-old, because that is the hardest thing, right? Is to ride a horse that has no education. So only my good riders ride the young horses, really, because if you ride only schoolmasters, you're not getting the whole picture of horse training, right? You know the end goal in whatever iteration that schoolmaster has, right? But how do you get from point A to point B, right? Mm-hmm. Like, this horse is 30 days under saddle. How do I make that into a show horse, right?
Exactly.
And I've had working students take some of my own young horses to their first material at Devon at 3. Like,
what an opportunity.
I try, because again, I have a horse buying problem because I'm an idiot, as Michael knows. So there's always a lot of horses, and I don't necessarily need to ride them all. And some of them I'm going to sell. So I may not be the primary rider of my own horses that are going to be for sale as 3 and 4 and 5 year olds. Like, I'll have the girls do some work on them, and that can be their little project. You know, and then we sell it, and everybody makes a little bit of money, and we're happy, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that's kind of how I do it. We start with something trained, and then the better you are, the more of an unschooled horse you get to ride.
Well, and I think, again, that's really unique. You know, sometimes I'm lucky enough too that I have, you know, some older gentlemen, and the riders maybe go on vacation or something, and they come in. And with their permission, I say, hey, can my assistant sit on them a couple days just to feel a flying change or ride through the third level or whatever? And I think it is important. You got to kind of know the target to hit the target.
Mm-hmm.
So once you know how it feels, then you can go back and
exactly. Exactly. So you have to know what the end game is before you can cross that, you know, cover that ground a little bit.
I have to say, I went the opposite route.
Okay. Well, no, I think that's good to know.
Yeah.
Like, so Michael, talk to us about that, because, you know, there's many different ways to roam. I mean, the four of us have all been friends now a long time, and we run different programs, but all successfully. So Michael, how did you do it?
No, I think it's a great setup that Lauren has for the working students. I started with the young horses. I've always been with the young horses and I never, like I said, when I first came here, I didn't know what Piaf Passage was, and I certainly didn't know what FEI meant or what the Prix Saint George was. I probably mispronounced it, Prix Saint George or Georg or something. I just started the young horses. That was my thing, you know, and I was happy doing that. And it was by doing lots of mistakes that I made my way up the levels, and that has taught me a lot and is still teaching me a lot.
Yeah,
there's a lot of horses where I feel, man, if I had that horse now. But you can always say that, right? But it, you know, every horse taught me something, good or bad, and you hopefully learn from your mistakes. So when you make the next horse, you hopefully have a better approach to teach whatever it is that you're working on. But I unfortunately did not have the opportunity to sit a Grand Prix horse and run through all the movements and appreciate it. And I started with something that was had a clean slate on it, and whatever came out of that was my doing, you know. So.
But don't you think, Michael and Lauren, I think kind of both are important, right? Because that end of the day, right, that makes you have the ability. I mean, Michael, you have made so many Grand Prix horses from the time they're little now all the way through. And I mean, that's such a cool thing to say, and to say like, oh, we started them. And I mean, I think if you're listening, and I think the whole point of this conversation is, how do we continue to help the next generation go through? So Michael, maybe I'll start with this question with you. Like, what advice would you give someone that's listening to this show and they say, okay, I really do want to be a horse trainer? We can have a whole nother discussion if that's a good idea or not. But the four of us have lived wonderful lives and had amazing experiences training horses. So, but we've all worked really hard. But Michael, what would be your advice? Like, how do we create an environment where people can develop horses from the beginning all the way up?
I think if they see that it is possible to be able to make a living of it and enjoy the process of educating the horses, I do see more young people. You know, it is exciting to see new faces at festival, for example, and you see, well, who's this? I haven't seen this person before. Mm-hmm. And you're like, oh, wow, I really like how they're presenting the horses, you know, and that is exciting. And I think there are coming more and more, but I still think there's a great need for riders out there that want to start young horses the right way and bring them along. And I really encourage the younger professionals to bring them all along, up the levels. Mm-hmm. I think it does teach you a lot. Yes, will you fall down a lot along the way? Yes, for sure. Mm-hmm. Will you do a lot of mistakes? Yes. But I think the hardest thing, and it's been very hard for me too, to admit to myself, that it's the mistakes that make me better. And when I am comfortable to accept that I can make mistakes, that's when I have made the biggest strides of moving forward in my training. Of course, there are different systems and different ways of progressing and educating the horses, but I think that piece for me was really big personally. And I think if you can get past that, it really opens a lot of doors for you.
No, I love that. And I mean, I think, again, there's a community of, I mean, there are four of us here. Like, we want to help the next generation. Mm-hmm. And I think there is some level of like knowing, it's like you and Lauren working together. I still work with Scott Hassler, you know, Megan, you work with Kathleen. Like, I think that idea of like, you're going to make mistakes, but you are going to have people around you that can help. You have to ask.
Yeah.
You may have to figure out how to make it work. You may have to go there for a month or something along those lines, but you know, it's possible. It's possible. Lauren, how about you? Same question.
Well, I think, you know, for the, you know, young people that were out there, I put my working students on more trained horses because I have the ability now to do so. Mm-hmm. But when I was coming, you know, when I was younger, you know, when I met you, Reese, was I 15? Yeah. Like, yes, it was the same thing. But I was starting there were no schoolmasters. No. You just started things and rode them.
Yeah.
And my poor old long-suffering horse that I took to FEI, the first one, you remember her, Kismet.
Yes.
Who still walks this earth, by the way. She's still alive. She is 35. That horse is 35 years old. But
she's old lady.
But, She's an old lady and she's still working, but that horse's first level test was my first level test. Her first second level was mine. We got to pre-St. George. It was her first pre-St. George and my first pre-St. George. And we went all the way to I-1, right? Love but that. That's how I learned. It took a glacially long time to get there. But that's like I had, and it was so slow. The first one was so slow. The second one was slow. The third one was slow. Now it's much faster. Now I have 9-year-old Grand Prix horses, right? And that's cool. But if they're ready, right? But like, I mean, I think Kismet did her first I-1 at like 17 or something. Like I was so slow. But like, I think it's cool that I now have these horses that these young professionals can learn. Again, they can feel what a flying change feels like. This is the Piaf. Maybe I help them from the ground and here's the transition out, right? I think that's cool because I didn't have that. So we're trying to do better for the next generation, right? And let them feel the end game. And then we take it to the sale horse or my project horses or their own personal horses that are usually not trained to the level. And then they know what to feel. They're like, oh, the pirouette needs to be in this balance. I felt it on this horse. Now I have to figure out how to recreate that balance in my own 7-year-old. Right. Yeah. And I think that's really, really cool. But, you know, the best advice that I have is kind of what I did is I got to ride so many horses growing up. You know, I was lucky enough. I was lucky enough that we worked. I worked for the Fjord Farm, but I also worked for a trainer in Ohio, Rebecca Stromat. I worked for her for a long time. I think I have collectively like 8 years of working student and then 4 years as an assistant before I decided to do my own thing. Not one year or 6 months. Like everybody's like, oh, I'm a trainer now. No. Literally, it was like,
really,
it's a lifetime, right? But I was able to ride lots of different horses. Both of those programs had sale horses. So there was some turnover, which is a good thing because you would sell one, then you get a new one and to figure out and go on. And you just have to figure it out by riding lots of different horses, like all kinds of horses. These are not fancy imported warm bloods back in 2001. Okay. It was whatever was laying around, right? It was thoroughbreds. It was appendix quarter horses. It was Frisians. And of course, always Fjords for me, but like still Fjords. But it was just cool to like, how do I put a flying change on a Frisian? You know?
Yeah.
How do I teach a Norwegian Fjord to pee off? And yes, you can. Like all these things. But I wouldn't trade that. You know, when I was younger, all I wanted to do was young riders because all my friends, all the other girls in the barn, they had young rider horses and I wanted to do young riders. And I was doing second level test 4 in chair seat. Okay. And I was like, oh, I really want to do young riders.
And there was still a second level test 4.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And it was so bad. I was so bad at it. Right. Like bad, bad. But I just wanted to do young riders. And now that I'm older, I'm so grateful that I wasn't able to have the opportunity that I thought I needed because what I got instead was such an education.
Yeah.
And that was priceless to me. So ride all of the weird things. That's my advice. Ride the weird things, figure them out, learn how to do it and just do a lot of it because it's just hours and time, right?
Yeah.
Like over and over and over figuring each horse out because every horse does a flying change a little differently. Every horse learns pirouette differently, you know, and they're all a little bit different. So the more experiences you get, then the more experienced you become and the more tools you have to work with.
I love that. Well, I mean, we could keep this going on the whole time, but I think also, you know, again, we have all been on this journey. We've all been friends a long time now. And the community that we have together is pretty special. I mean, we all also did the Young Horse Trainers Conference together and, you know, we know each other that way. But I think, again, you know, going back to the community and working for people and seeing what everybody does and talking, that the four of us would love to talk with the youth and help help develop. So I really can't thank you guys enough for your time. As always, you're so supportive of us. And Michael, how can people follow you online? And then Lauren will ask the same question.
They can find me through Hilltop Farms website. I have Instagram. I do. Yeah. I'm on social media. I don't know how to find me.
Perfect.
Search my name, Michael Bragdell. I'm on Facebook, of course. That's pretty much it. Come find me, tag me.
If you can't find him, just text me.
Yeah. And Lauren, how can we find you?
by my own website, laurentelmydressage.com, which is ridiculous. I love my website. And on Facebook a lot, because I'm a bit more of a boomer than Michael. I am on Instagram, but Facebook's probably faster. But yeah, Michael likes Instagram. I like Facebook. The world continues to turn.
I love it. I love it. Well, thank you guys so much for everything. This has been fun, and we need to do it again soon.
Want to reach a passionate, engaged audience of horse lovers? The Horse Radio Network, with thousands of listeners worldwide, offers unique sponsorship opportunities to connect your brand with horse owners, riders, and enthusiasts. Over 90% of our listeners have bought a product from a HRN ad in the past year. Partner with HRN and take your brand to the next level. Visit www.horseradionetwork.com/advertise today.
So Megan, today, very interestingly enough, before the show, USCF released the Dressage Riding Standard Guidelines. So this was on an email that came from USCF. If you haven't seen it, we're going to go through it because Megan and I felt like it was really important that we talk about it. So we're basically just going to go through the list. So it starts with the anatomy of a successful experience, determining if you are ready to move up a level. Basic questions to ask yourself as a guideline on whether you're ready to compete at the next level.
If you practice a movement that is new to the next level, are you able to consistently meet the requirements of the movement directives as stated on the test?
Yeah. I mean, Megan, I think this sounds easy, right? But it's really true. Like, this is where you do need to lean on a qualified person, a qualified trainer or a judge. Because when you look at the test, you really have to print it out. Because the USDF guidelines, if you have the USDF book, it doesn't talk about the directives. And I think that's really important that when you're working on a new test, that you print out the entire test so you can look at what the judges are scoring.
And so, the purpose.
The purpose, right? Like, read it all. And I mean, I try, you know, now it's so nice because we have the phones and pretty much anywhere you can pull up your test. And when I'm working with someone, we were doing this today, we're kind of working on what some winter plans are with horses, right?
Yep.
Going to head to Florida soon. So we're like, okay, you know, this horse needs to be doing second level. Let's pull up second level test one and let's look at it this week. Next week, we'll do second two. Next, the week after, second three, and we'll make some plans. That was literally what we were doing. So I think that's the point, right? Because you've got to be able to consistently meet the requirements, not that you do it once or twice. And I think that that's, I mean, I think that's really important, right?
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I think that it sounds silly, but it's like, yeah, that's important. So the second bullet is, on average, you and your horse reasonably confirmed at the current level you are competing with a final score reflecting competency such as a 63% or higher.
I think that's good. I think 100%.
That's 100%. I mean,
I
don't know about you, Megan, but that's kind of like our rule.
Yeah.
That you got to be able to go through that test and hit the requirement every time, really. I mean, you know, like a 63%, it is, you've got to be able to know the geometry, hit the requirements. You know, I don't want to send someone out if I think you're going to be in the 50s.
Exactly.
I think it's soul crushing. Like, I don't want to go out if I can't be in the 50s.
And it's nerve wracking as the trainer, because you're like, is she going to do it today? Is she not going to do it today? And it's also, you have show nerves. So what you're doing at home, I usually say expect 80%, not 100% of what you have at home.
Yeah. So if you're trending at a 60%, you're going to be at a 58. You know what I mean? Like, with nerves and I mean, I think that's really important. And I don't know about you, but like, just because you hit that mark once or twice doesn't mean you're ready to move on again. Right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah.
I was at the horse show this summer, And I had a very nice lady. We were stable next to at the first show. And it felt like my horse, Rocky, did a ton of horse shows, but he did a lot of shows, but he only went in the ring actually 4 times. Like, it felt like way more, but, you know, because of the way we did it, right? So the first show, we got like a 69 at training level. I was very happy with him, but, you know, I mean, the environment, whatever. The second time he was good. I mean, he basically would have the rest of the season was high point for the horse show. I mean, he was very good, but the second time he went in the ring, he got like a 73, maybe 72. I was excited. I was like, yes,
that's amazing.
Who was showing across from us? I saw her at the next show and she said, well, aren't you going to move up? And I was like, I only got one score. Like, I mean, I got one good score. And I was like, but he's not ready to move up. And I thought that was an interesting comment because I thought he's only done it once. Like, he's got to be able to do this for the, in my opinion, at training level for the season before I move forward.
And for me, I think going to a horse show, it takes 3 to 5 times down center line to really know a horse in the show ring, because they're different at a show than they are at home. You know, what 100%. Corner does he cut? What corner does, which diagonal does he run out of? You know, I mean, they're very consistent at the horse show, but you need a couple of horse shows to really understand your horse in the ring, in my opinion.
Yeah. Well, and you know, like, this was at the Kentucky Horse Park, which is, I think, one of the hardest venues that you'll show at. I mean, it's a tough
one. Yes. Yeah.
And you know, it's not just the horse show ring's the easiest part. It's the walk that you have to do, like a mile track up to the ring, you know, and so, you know, don't be afraid. Like, it's okay to spend a whole season. And ideally you are up in the 70s at the end of the, or your, whatever's going to be the max of your horse at that show. So I think, you know, saying 60, I will not kind of let anybody go if I don't feel like they're going to get at least a 60, but I think this 63 is a really good number.
I agree. Number 3, does your horse willingly cooperate in the performance of the movements required for the level at which you are considering competing?
Yeah. I mean, this is supposed to be a dance, you know, and it's also, it's a performing art. Like, this is an art form that we do and we have chosen. So it's like, no offense. If I'm not dancing with somebody that wants to dance with me on any point, I think that's something to think about. I think that's a really good one.
And typically at the horse show, it's, you know, if it's not comfortable at home, it's not going to get better at the horse show. Typically, it's going to get worse.
Yeah. I mean, I think you're absolutely right. Right. Yeah. Like, this isn't going to get better.
No.
So I think it's important to do that. And like, and they need to be able to do it again, more than once or twice. Like, I mean, you're about to spend a lot of money at a horse show. And
yes,
you know, I think there is a lot of comments that we've heard from some judges, maybe a little bit off air, but of people going to horse shows and just not being ready, just not being competent at the level. And, you know, then it kind of goes to judges. And I also don't want to throw trainers under the bus, because I know some trainers, that clients are going to do what they're going to do.
Yeah.
And, you know, so I think this is just important. Remember, it's a willing it's a willing performance from everybody. So I think that's good. All right. Number 4. Are you familiar with all the movements asked for at the next level up and the characteristics that define them? Consequently, are you and your horse proficient and confident in performing the movements as they are required in the test? Great question. You know, it should be yes, yes. It should be, you know, I like to say before I enter the horse show that on test riding day, and I try, I don't know about you, but kind of once a week, I try to say, okay, if we're showing training level, I kind of want to ride a test that's training level, or I kind of want to ride a first level test to kind of see where we are and practice our center lines and practice our halting and practice the movements. And I want to be able to roll through that test pretty easily at home before I enter the horse show.
Yes. And I like to have my students schooling at home, maybe a level or two above what they're going to show. I think that gives them confidence. If I can do that. I mean, sometimes that's not always what happens, but yeah. I try to always make sure I'm schooling or having them school, let's say second level, and it's going to be their first horse show and they're going to go out training level.
Absolutely. And confidently, like I can, yeah. I can nail this. I think that's so important. So again, some of these, they sound really theoretical and easy, but sometimes, you know, people want to rush it and it's like, why are you rushing? Don't rush. I'm somebody that I've always had test anxiety, mm-hmm. like for yeah. anything, like in school, whatever. So I have to always over prepare. So when I see some people going and I'm like, are you prepared? Like, I don't know how to handle it. I'm like, you're not prepared. You haven't practiced. You haven't written the test. Like, what is happening? Yeah. So
ride the test. Ride
the test, please. And be confident and do well. Yes, exactly. Well, again, I mean, you and I have, you know, our students go and do well because they're prepared. Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
Things happen, of course, but
we do the work. So there's another section. It's strategies for a successful experience. Number one is, as a general rule, follow the adage of competing at the level below which you are training. Oh, wow. I just said that.
Yeah. Look at you. You're so good. All right. This is going to be like, we've already said a lot of these, so this is great. Number two, read the test directives. Yes. To ensure that you know the factors the judges will be taking in consideration when determining the score of each movement.
Yep.
Yep.
As you move up the levels, if you can feel like the movements come very quickly, one after another, before competing at a higher level, practice the test at home enough times so that you feel you have the time to prepare for each movement. Oh, I like that one. Ah! Yes.
Oh, I always think of it like, if it feels like a roller coaster, yeah, whoa back. You got to get a few half halts in there. You know what I mean? You've written tests. You're like,
yes.
What's happening? What's happening? And so I think it's important. Like, if it feels like a roller coaster, we need to continue to train and not go to the horse show yet, or, you know, do something different, which is totally fine. So I think that's good. All right. Next one. Know what core movements define a level. These may be underlying what is described in the purpose. Read it. The purpose, by the way. For instance, at first level test three, the 10-meter circles and broken test lines, acceptance of the aids used for bending and turning. Second level introduces collection and the movements that help develop it, such as shoulder in and turn on the haunches, along with sitting trot. That's important in second level. So you need to know if you're going to go from first level to second, for example, you need to be able to, collection is huge. Sitting the trot, sometimes that's the limiting factor, and it may take 6 months. It may take a year. I've seen it take a year of someone really working hard, right?
Yep. It took me 2 years to sit the trot when I was learning.
I mean, it took me a long time to sit Big Mike's trot.
Yeah.
It took me a very long time, like a couple years to really sit well and keep his back up and all those things. So I think that that's important.
That is. This one is a big one.
This is a big one. You got the long one to read. Megan gets to read the long one. Sorry, Megan.
Wait a minute. Sorry. Why did I get this one? Okay. I deserve it after all the ads. At the end of your show season, first make sure you can answer yes to all of the questions posed above. Then make a thoughtful evaluation of your success. And that's hard. I think
that's hard.
Need to be honest with ourselves.
Yes.
Consider both your strengths and areas in need of improvement. The next level will not only have new test movements, but also a heightened expectation of your horse's balance, engagement, and self-carriage, which requires time and strength building. Make a training plan that takes advantage of educational and observational opportunities, such as ride a test and schooling shows. When you feel your horse is confirmed in the daily work and believe they fulfill the purposes defined on the next level's dressage test, you can be confident that you are ready to begin competitions at the new level.
Yes. But this is great, because this is really true. I mean, I think this needs a little discussion, because I think in our heads, it's like, I'm going to do a level a year. Sometimes, yes. But sometimes you have to stop and take a deep breath and say, or if you've gone to the horse show a few times and you're like in the high 50s, for example, maybe sometimes it may be of like, hey, pump the brakes a little, because that's soul crushing, right? Like that's soul crushing for everyone, not just the rider, the coaches, all of us. It's soul crushing.
Yep.
But sometimes just to stop and not show for a minute. That doesn't mean you can't go to the horse show. That doesn't mean you can't volunteer at the horse show. That doesn't mean you can't scribe, for example, where you're learning. But maybe you want to save your money or, you know, or just your soul and say, let me just take a beat here. Let me put my money toward lessons, maybe some clinics. If you know someone's coming and they're like, I need some help with this, whatever it is, with the changes or whatever it may be. Maybe it is that you do a ride-a-test. And you do that ride-a-test until you can get the score you need. Right?
Yeah.
And then that's a schooling great show.
Idea. Yeah.
Same. Like, and the other thing is, I don't know about your area, Megan. We have a nice schooling show circuit here. And quite frankly, they're fun. They're super fun. But I will say, watch, like if you're coming out with a 75%, sometimes I see that and I'm like, oh, that judge. And I'm like, who's the judge? When I have a student come back and I'm like, okay, we're going to delete at least 10% of his points on this.
Yes.
Whatever, you know, like, yeah. So if your judge is a Santa Claus, it does feel good. And it feels good to put on Facebook. I mean, I'm not gonna lie. We've all done it, but that's that self-reflection piece of like,
yes.
Was it a 75? Like, or is the judge just being nice and encouraging, which is also good. Don't get me wrong. But I do think that's important to remember. Like, you want to make sure that you're successful. And I do, you know what I'm saying? I don't know if I'm articulating that well, but like, you do need honest feedback. And sometimes that's honest feedback from yourself. That's where your coach comes in or an educated friend. And they're like, yeah, that changed. It was late. It was not a 7 or an 8. Yep. Like, that's going to be a 4.
Yeah.
But I think that's okay. And I think it's better to do that or show a level under or go the freestyle route. Like if you're shown first level a ton and you're like, I don't want to show first level again. That's okay. Maybe look at a freestyle, right?
Ugh, I love freestyles.
I know, right? I mean, would have needed to get that 63% at the highest test of the level or 63% at the test above, like second level 1. You can also do that. You've got to get that certificate of competency. You've got to be able to do that. But once you've done that, then I think that's awesome to do. So I think these are great. And I think they have come out with these guidelines because people are kind of showing when they're not supposed to.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the judges and trainers, I mean, we've all kind of seen it. And sometimes it is like, talk to your trainer about this. Make a plan now, I think, for the fall of, okay, like this is what we're going to work on. And we're going to work on second level, but be okay with in the spring, if it's not ready, then you look at your plan again, for example.
Mm-hmm. Revisit it. It's okay to change your plans.
Yeah. I mean, let's be real. I mean, if I had to go out and ride a pre-St. George right now, I'm not fit enough to do that. Mm-hmm. You know, like I've been doing that, you know, like I would need to get a little fitter, you know, or whatever it may be. So I think these are great. I think these are great guidelines. They came out on USCF. They'll be on the USCF website. I found it on a USCF just email that came through today. And I just, Megan and I we watched these. So we were looking, but it was kind of like, oh, wait, what is this? And I do think this is a good pre. I printed it out. I'm holding it right now and it's going on the fridge in my barn.
I wish I had it when I had a lot of students that were competing. I think it's a fabulous guideline. So thank you. Thank you for sharing.
Absolutely. So I hope that helps everybody, gives you some excitement. But Megan, we do have excitement because we have the book club.
I'm so excited.
Yes.
So
go ahead.
Begin and Begin Again by Denny Emerson. That is our book from October to December. I hope you all have started it. I've started it. I think it's a great read. I'm halfway through and I look forward to reading more.
I love it. I love it. And our bonus book. So I hope to, Megan and I really hope to see you at convention. We're going to be there and we're going to do our book club, I think for a Saturday afternoon. And we're talking with Beth Baumert, who is wonderful. And she wrote, she's written a couple books, but we are discussing How Two Minds Meet, The Mental Dynamics of Dressage. Love it. So we're looking forward to our bonus book and seeing everybody at convention and all our friends with the book club. It's been great. If you're not subscribed yet, do that now. Just search Dressage Radio Show on your favorite podcast player. You can join the fun and supportive community of the Horse Radio Network auditors on Patreon. You'll get behind the scenes insight, special offers, and opportunities to participate in Horse Radio Network podcasts. Go to patreon.com/horseradionetwork. The Dressage Radio Show Facebook page is obviously the Dressage Radio Show. My website is maplecrestfarmky.com and my email is reese@horseradionetwork.com.
And my website is lindenhoff.com and my email is lindenhoffllc@gmail.com. We'd like to thank our friends and show sponsors, Kentucky Performance Products and Chewy. Keep on kicking on. Until the next show, talk to you soon. Thank you.